Blog Talk Radio.
Superstar?
I am well. How about you?
Fantastic. How's it going, everybody? I am Chris Block, and you have the Third Man in Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. And I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and the creator, I believe, of thethirdmanin.com, also pugchatter.com. And it is Tuesday night, January 17th, 2012. It's 8:31 here in Chicago. A little technical difficulties there at the top of the hour. And, you know, Superstar, I know how you like being on the bottom anyway.
I do.
Why I would if I was you. I know. I would if I was you, too. So we're just doing that. We've got a lot to talk about, and we're going to try to condense it into an hour since I have things to do, Superstar.
I bet you do. You're busy.
I know. I've been very busy, as you can probably tell. I'm a little under the weather. I've been going crazy here the past few couple weeks, but and it can stop us because tonight on the show we're going to be talking about a whole host of things. I had them written down here. I was looking at them a half hour ago when everything went wrong. We got emails tonight on the show.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to that. It's been a while since you've done an email segment or two. So
we're 97 of these in, and usually what happens when we do emails is people yell at me, I get mad, and then I yell back.
Right. This is why I'm looking forward to it.
But as an update, it's January 17th, and my sunny disposition is still intact, Superstar. I'd be happy to let you know.
Oh, Stan, I'm looking forward to it. We have things coming up, and I would love to see if you can hold on to your sunny disposition through, say, the first week of February.
Probably through the first week of February I could do it. Beyond that, when I go on the diet plan I was telling you about, for people that weren't listening, I think we talked about it 2 weeks ago. It's the Dallas Eakins diet. I'm going on 90 days, no caffeine, no alcohol. So I think at that point, or very shortly after I begin that, I will be a pretty miserable son of a bitch to be around.
So,
those shows should be interesting.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I was mentioning to somebody today, I go, you know, it's been a long time since I've been on this consistent. You know, I think Locke is really chomping to get to show 100 so he could quit this. But then I thought about something. One of the other New Year's resolutions or goals that you had for the new year, and I'm still a little uneasy about the idea of this, is doing a live remote of this show. Well, you talked openly about ending this at show 100. That gives us very little time to get a live remote of this debacle.
We'll end it at show 100, and then sometime around July, we'll do 101. I mean, we're like well ahead of our usual pace right now. We're doing about a show a week. So if we quit in three more shows, then we could start back up again in the summer, and we'll be on this. You know, we'll be back on pace.
All right, reunion tour. I like it.
All right, so I will try to keep my sunny disposition intact for this whole show, but that does not mean, superstar, you know this, that because I'm working on my overall sunniness, it does not mean that I now have a tolerance for dopes, because I don't. And later on in the show, I'm going to do something that I don't normally do. I'm going to plug another Blackhawks blog, and that's like the nice thing that I'm going to do, okay? So that's like something new. I'm going to, you know, not that I have anything against Blackhawks blogs, but we don't usually do that. I'm going to do that, but then at the same time, I am going to blast them.
Well, I'm sure they'll appreciate the mention on the show. I don't know.
I'm sure they will.
Appreciate them. I don't know if they'll appreciate the message.
I'm not necessarily going to blast the entire website. I don't even know the person that I'm going to, you know, that I'm going to reference, but. I just read one of the dumbest collection of thoughts today that I've read in a long time, and they have to be outed. So we're going to do that later if we have time. I will have time because I just said it, so I'm going to have to talk about it. Also, we got people, like I said, emails, probably have to get right into it because we don't have a lot of time. People want to know. They want to know about Blackhawks trades. They want to know about Victor Stahlberg and his beautifulness. That's not actually what they want to talk about. I don't even remember what they want to talk about because I don't have the email in front of me. They want to talk about my puppy dog. You know, Rutu, this goes into it. We'll lead into the first email. Rutu, I will have you know, is still crying over and over and over about this ball.
It's a very important ball to him.
It is the most important toy that he has ever gotten. For those of you who missed it last week, I told a story. My puppy dog, Tuomo Rutu, although we dropped the Tuomo. Rutu has he got a new gift about 2 weeks ago tonight. He got a new gift, and it's this real high-pitched squeaky ball. And Rutu's a very small dog, so he's figured out how to carry it around in his mouth. That's not a problem anymore. But he still loves the ball. He carries it wherever he goes. The biggest problem that I'm having right now, Superstar, is sleeping. Because Rutu brings the ball into bed with him. Because he sleeps with me. And, I mean, this happened with other stuff. This would happen with bones. He would have...
mad when you put the ball in your mouth?
No, I don't put the ball in my mouth. But what he'll do is he'll put the ball down. And then, you know, during the course of the evening, I'll roll over on the ball. And I'm a pretty dead sleeper, so I don't hear the ball squeaking, but he won't like this, and he'll want the ball back, and he'll start, you know, not really scratching me, but digging in, you know, into me, and then crying, and then I'll wake up, and then I'll roll over on the ball again, and I'll hear the ball. This goes on, like, all night long.
That I can see how sleeping would be a little bit of an issue. Because you can't, at this point, you can't tell the dog he can't come into bed with you. I mean, you can't...
No, he's too.
Well, right. That ship sailed a long time ago. And you can't, you know, you can't hide the ball. And you know...
There's no hiding balls. There's no hiding balls on Room 2. He's
right,
too smart.
Right. Exactly. So you're just either going to... I don't know. You're stuck.
Yeah, I got some more emails about people suggesting how I should discipline my dog or train my dog. And let me just say this. My dog is fine. I got it, okay? I appreciate everyone's concern. But Rutu and I, we got a good thing going. You know, he's got a lot of demands, and I try to meet those demands. But other than that, he's a good dog. When I snap my fingers and say, come here, he comes. And when he's getting out of control outside, I stop my foot and he stops. And, you know, that's about it, though. Everything else he controls. But, you know, whatever.
And people may think that you're being too lenient. You're letting the dog kind of dictate what's going on. And trust me, the dog puts up with enough of your shit, too, that a little freedom for him isn't a bad thing.
That's what Moose, my cat, we got emails about Moose, too. I've got more emails this past 2 weeks about the dog and the cat than I get about hockey. Moose, someone asked me, like, why, like I was being cruel by naming my cat Moose. If you'd seen Moose, you'd understand
you
why it's called
why.
Moose.
You would know why it's called Moose.
When I got Moose from Anti-Cruelty in September of 06, I got him as a pair with Midnight, who recently passed away, and that was awful. But I got them as a pair. They came. They were brothers. I adopted them as a pair. But Midnight was Midnight. Moose came as Carson. And Moose is not a Carson. Midnight was an all-black cat. I would think everybody would think that. But Moose is, well, let's just put it this way. Moose dwarfs Rutu, first of all. And whenever there's a physical altercation, Moose always comes out on top. So that's why Moose is called Moose. But the dog and the cat get along great. They're buddies. But you're right. Moose has learned that, like I think everybody learns throughout time, less is more.
Yeah.
When Daddy leaves to go to work, the most miserable thing I think for both of them right now is that I work a lot from home. And, you know, anytime I have to go, like, actually go work in an office or go out for a meeting or whatever, they're just like, oh, great. You know, 'cause who knows what they got going on when I'm not around.
Yeah. I can see that.
Well, also later on we're going to talk about, let me get this, since we're talking about Rutu. Let's talk about the hockey player Rutu. Trade possibilities. I got a bunch of these kind of emails. It is that kind of time. I will say this as we segue into the Blackhawks discussion. I do believe that the Blackhawks are gearing up to make a trade, and I think they're going to do it rather quickly here before, and this is something we're going to talk about a little bit later on, before everybody else realizes that their supporting cast really isn't all that great. I think that they're going to look to make a move. I think they're going to do it probably. I don't know that anything will get done before an All-Star game. Probably right after the All-Star game sometime. That's not to say that they won't make a move or, you know, a minor move or two at the deadline. I think the Hawks are going to look to make a big move, perhaps a little bit bigger than the one they made last year that brought Michael Frolik to town. Because as we see, if you watch Michael Frolik lately, that wasn't a big move at all. But I do believe that they're gearing up to do that. So trade discussion is. It should be on everybody's plate right now. I've heard a lot of people suggest Juanma Rutu, and we did get an email this week. Someone asked me, like, what did I think about my dog's namesake coming back to the Blackhawks? Let me say this. I love watching Juanma Rutu play. And it was a sad thing to see him go when he did with the Blackhawks, because for those of you who weren't fans, and I'm sure that some of you, not all of you, but who weren't around or not paying attention that closely when Rutu was traded, that was during the Dennis Savard regime. And the one criticism that I had of Dennis Savard's handling of Tuomo Rutu was that it was obvious that Rutu's side that he was most comfortable on was the right side. And for whatever reason, Rutu never skated on the right side. He always skated on the left. Now, I know some people have suggested, and this is what I don't get. I know some people have suggested that Rutu would come in and play, who would center the second line between Sharp and Hossa. I don't see where that makes any sense at all. Rutu's best position is not center. His best position is right wing, and because his best position is right wing, where is he going to play? I mean, is he going to be, you know, is he going to be Dave Bolin's right wing? Okay, I would take that, but what do you got to give up to give up Tuomo Rutu? And I know some people are suggesting, oh well, it'll be a package. It'll be Rutu or Jokinen and Tim Gleason, something along those lines. Jokinen's having a terrible season, and I just don't think Rutu's a good fit for this Blackhawks team. You know, if you're looking to put him in that second line center role, I don't think that's his role. And I don't know. I just don't see bringing him back to be a third line winger. I don't see where that's forward progress for him or the Blackhawks. But we'll see.
Well, you definitely talk about the most glaring need, and that's a second line center. And I don't think, you know, you can put him there, and that's something that's going to work.
He takes faceoffs. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people are looking at when they look at the stat lines. And I don't have the stat lines up in front of me right now. I could get them. Just a second here. I think people look at, let's see, Tuomo Rutu faceoffs. I think they look at him and they see that he takes faceoffs, although he's a bad faceoff, 38.2%. He's taken 110 faceoffs, he's 38.2%. He's not a center iceman. Rutu's best along the boards, and again, he's not a left winger, he's a right winger, so where are you going to put him? And, you know, I just don't see where that's a fit. And I know a lot of people talk about Tim Gleason. Watch Tim Gleason play before you ask the Blackhawks to trade for him. I just ask you that. I wrote about it, and I'll say it over and over again. It might cost you something. But if you're serious about winning a Stanley Cup, the guy that you go out and get is Francois Beauchemin. And, you know, I mean, a lot of teams are going to be looking for him. But, you know, that's a trading partner that that's Bob Murray and the Blackhawks, they should be able to, you know, that's a good relationship, and a great one, but it's a decent relationship. They can work together. And, I mean, he's the perfect guy. Tim Gleason, I just don't see where Tim Gleason helps you. I mean, if you're going to bring him in to play him on the third pair, but, you know, why are you doing that? We talked about this before. I know a lot of people are unhappy with Nicholas Jalmerson, and I feel kind of partially responsible for it. But I think people misinterpret what, you know, when I criticize him, it's because, you know, it's in an offensive manner. It's that he hasn't progressed you know, as far as his offensive skills and moving the puck and you know, picking up his head and taking a step and then passing instead of banking it up off the wall. Those are my criticisms of him, because you want him to be more of a leader on that second pair. Jalmerson's never going to be a power play guy. You just want his passes to be more crisp. And when he has time and space, he's okay. But he's not comfortable handling the puck under duress, and not a lot of guys are, but I mean, he's a lot of times he's just panicking. But defensively in the assignments that Jalmerson gets, I mean, it's not to say that he's irreplaceable, because that's not true. I mean, it depends on, you know, the point is, and I made this last week, what good is going to come of, because I've seen it suggested, trade for Tim Gleason so you could put Nicholas Jalmerson on the third pair and put Letty with Gleason? Are you high? Like, watch Tim Gleason play. that's not going to improve your second pair. Your second pair, you know, if let's just hypothetically say, if you're putting Jalmerson and Boschman together, those guys are taking at least half of the key checking assignments away from Keith and Seabrook. And Jalmerson already gets them anyway because he's that good defensively. I know a lot of people see the breakdowns in front of the net. Jalmerson can't do everything. Letty is, you know, especially in the last 2 months, is completely inept in front of his own net. And Jalmerson can't do everything. I don't know what the communication is between those two guys, but it can't be very good. Moving Jalmerson down to the third pair, what does that do? That makes your third pair better than your second pair. And then, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Watch Jalmerson play. And instead of when the puck goes in the net, looking at seeing who's on the ice, who are the defensemen? Oh, Jalmerson's out there again. Well, you know, who is he out there against? Where did the play break down? Rewind it. Watch. It's, you know, Jalmerson's still, you know, he's an important part of that defense. And, you know, like I said, for now, Letty ultimately is going to be back on that second pair and he's going to be logging huge minutes. But for now, he should be on the third pair. And you should want to bring in a guy who can log 20 minutes a night, 20 solid minutes a night on the PK, key checking assignments with Jalmerson, so those guys can be a shutdown pair and Keith and Seabrook are opened up to new more offensively. Anyway.
Yep. Not going to get an argument out of me. But you bring up a very good point is, as far as instead of just naturally looking and being like, oh, shocking, the Blackhawks gave up another goal or you know, close to around the net on a breakdown defensively, oh, it must have been Jalmerson, must have been Letty. Where the breakdown happened, where that play developed from, you know, possibly who, you know, maybe you just got beat, which is fine. But if there was a breakdown, you got to figure out where it was and who it was before you just naturally say, oh, yeah, shocking, those two are out there again.
We should probably go over Blackhawks 4-3 winners against San Jose on Sunday night. Anything stand out to you from that game other than Andrew Shaw is the best Blackhawks player of all time?
He is the greatest. You know, I'm going to get the you know, the 55 jersey on order. No, I'm not.
Better not, because you'll get a new number, and then you have to change it.
Right. You know, once again, we talked about it last week. I still, going back through all the games over the past week, we're still waiting for the team to play 60 minutes. You come out, first of all, you come out against Detroit over the weekend in the matinee, and you just look atrocious in the first period. And, you know, you pick it up a little bit in the second, then you come out and you seemingly dominate in the third. Well, you're not going to dominate like they did in the third for 60 minutes. It's just not going to happen. We all understand that. But you have to look so bad for a period. Yeah, and there was some breakdowns in the San Jose game where it was like, here it comes. And we were going back and forth towards the end of the game. You know, here it comes. You know, and I was shocked that game didn't get tied up. So I'm still looking for 60 minutes. Can I get one 60-minute game, please?
You know, I still haven't seen Saturday's game. I was listening to it. Oh. That reminds me. So I'm listening to the broadcast on Saturday, right? And in the third period, I don't know what happened. I still haven't seen it. I'll probably watch it tomorrow, which won't do us any good tonight. But John Weideman on the radio broadcast, something happened in the third period between Yuri Hudler and Brent Seabrook. And all of a sudden, John Weideman goes, you know, the next time that Brent Seabrook sees Yuri Hudler in a vulnerable position like that, I'm betting that Yuri Hudler, that'll be the end of Yuri Hudler's night. Something like that. I'm getting it wrong because I'm just thinking off the top of my head. But that's what he said. He was like, the next time Yuri Hudler's in a vulnerable position like that, I'm betting that Brent Seabrook won't think twice about ending his night. And, you know, and I'm, that's not exact, again. But Troy Murray, I was, like, dumbfounded. I stopped what I was doing. I was like, oh, my God. And Troy Murray just goes, this is exactly what Troy Murray says. He goes, you did not just say that. I mean, and Weidman sort of, I don't think Weidman was thinking at all. I mean, this isn't, I'm not trying to knock Weidman. I don't know what he was thinking when he said it. And it was obvious that he wasn't thinking because he, you know, you could visualize him turning to Troy Murray in the booth because Weidman's response was something to the effect of, oh no. And I'm like, you know, well, you're condoning or you're endorsing Brent Seabrook ending a guy's night. Like what is going on here?
Yeah, that's yeah. You make sure the mic is off when you say things like that, John.
Go ahead.
I don't know when that happened. I was watching the game, but I was also doing other things, so I must have missed it because nothing jumped out at me from what I saw in the third period where I was like, whoa.
I think it was just something innocuous that was going on during the game, probably building up or something. But, yeah, I was just – when I heard it, and I – like after – like because Troy Murray wanted to disassociate himself from John Weidman at that point, you could hear it. And it was late in the game. Or late in the third period, that you know, again, I don't remember exactly when, but I just remember thinking to myself at the time, like, they have to make this guy apologize for this statement. But he didn't. I mean, he didn't that night, you know, and then I didn't listen Sunday. But I was just like, they have to make this guy apologize for that because that was ridiculous. I want to talk a little bit about the Blackhawks and where they're at right now. 46 games into the season. We got to talk about this a little bit. 46 games into the season right now, the Blackhawks are atop the West, the last I looked. We are starting late, so who knows what's going on. No, not atop the West. St. Louis won. So by percentage points, they're above the Blackhawks again. They both have the same number of wins. St. Louis played one less game, so Hawks are really in fourth, 1 point ahead of Detroit. So that's your Central Division right now, 60-59. That's pretty – and then Nashville's got 56 and a game in hand on the Blackhawks. So that's pretty good.
That is very good. It's a very tight division, and, you know, St. Louis is just playing out of their minds right now, and they're – you know, I don't see them going anywhere. I don't know if they can keep up this pace, but I you know, they're not going to tank and all of a sudden drop to, you know.
No. St. Louis, I think the Blackhawks are on a collision course in St. Louis. That's the way I see this thing going. Whether that's 4-5 or whether that's 1-8. I mean, I don't see St. Louis falling out of the playoffs unless they just have, you know, a tremendous amount. If you watch the Blues, watch T.J. Oshie right now. The kid is playing out of his mind, all over the ice. I mean, he's really coming into his own under Ken Hitchcock. T.J. Oshie, watch him play. You know, and the defense is solid. Kevin Shattenkirk. You know, he's the guy that they're going to build that team, that defense around. But anyway, Blackhawks at this point, 27-13-6, 60 points. As we said, last year at this time through 46 games, 24-18-4, 52 points. So the Blackhawks, 8 points better. The question I'd ask you, Superstar, just first of all, right, you know, first thoughts, like, what to you has been the big difference, again, just up to this point, this year's team versus last year's team?
Well, you know, I think obviously there's numerous factors that go into this. I don't think you could point to one thing and say that made them 8 points better at this point. One of the things that I thought of naturally, and when you start talking about early season with this team, has always been Jonathan Tate starting slow. Now, Jonathan Tate has not started slow this year. He started pretty quick, and he pretty much continued it. And, you know, when you have a guy like that who can carry you, that's a big thing, because if you remember, last year he struggled mightily early. Now, they fall. Yeah. The other thing, too, is they early on, you know, even going back to most of last year, their overall home record wasn't very good last year. And while they've fallen off here recently, they started the year with an outstanding home record. Which play better, you know, you gotta take care of things at home, and it's very cliche. But, you know, that's where you're supposedly going to have the advantage, and even if it's down to having the last change, you got to win those games when you can early on.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Taves. Got here a little bit of numbers comparison this year. Again, this is just through 46 games, so... this season compared to last season, 46 games, you know, the ones that stick out to you, Taves would be one of them. Last year, through 46 games, he had played 44. He had 16 goals, 20 assists. This year, played all the games. He had 8 more goals and 2 more assists. And he's also plus 15 compared to last year's plus 7 at this point. Kane has been involved in more goals. He's just scored less goals and in more games. Last year at this point, Kane had played 37 games. Remember, he had that high ankle sprain in December. He had 37 games, 13 goals, 34 points this year. 46 games, 10 goals, 39 points. So he's behind last year's pace as it is. I mean, the guys that are really killing it, obviously Taves, and the big difference has been Hossa. Hossa at this point last year had only played 31 games. He's only missed one this year. At this point, Hossa had only contributed 10 goals last year. Now he has 17 and 48 points and a plus 20, a wicked plus 23. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, like who's your first half MVP, Hossa or Taves? That's a hard decision to make. If you just look at this year compared to last, it's the same deal. It's almost like you can't lose with those two guys. I think, to me, obviously Stallberg's the guy. Stallberg has doubled his numbers from last year, but you got to take that with a caveat, because whose numbers is he replacing? You know, because it's like, okay, well, he's scoring for himself and then also somebody else. So you basically put Stallberg's numbers from last year together with Bickle's. That's the guy. Brian Bickle, last year at this point, 43 games, 11 goals, 13 assists. This year, 4 goals, 5 assists. And he was a plus 10 last year, a minus 6 right now.
Yeah, but, you know, he's definitely been a different player this year.
You could argue, and you can't even argue it, it's actually true, that last year the supporting cast was contributing more to this point of the season anyhow than this year's is. On last year's team you had Brouwer at 11 goals, Pisani had 7. Bolin's up this year, he had 7 at this point last year, 13 now. Stallberg had 7. Brouwer 11, Kopechki 8, Skilly at 7. This is the one that I want to brush by you. Jack Skilly. Remember how he got ran out of town, right?
Yes.
Jack Skilly at this point last year, 43 games, 7 goals, 16 points, a plus 5. You know what Michael Frolik is right now?
I would bet not close.
Michael Frolik has 2 less goals, 1 less assist, and he's a minus 6.
Wow. You know, you bring up a interesting point. I don't know if you have that in front of you. What is the goal differential from last year as far as goals for or goals against at this time last year opposed to this year?
That's a good question. Last year at this point, the Hawks had scored 141 goals, and this is actually it would actually be more than that because the numbers I have in front of me don't include shootouts, and the standings do. So they probably scored how many? They probably scored six more goals this year than last year. Not even. Probably five or six more goals this year than they did last year at this point.
Okay.
I'll look it up real quick. You have
I was just wondering, you talk about, obviously goals for and what the difference there has been, but I think obviously a big key is the number of goals that they were giving up last year opposed to the number of goals that they're giving up this year. And that's something to think about, too, when you're talking about where they were last year and where they are this year. For the most part, you've had an interest in Duncan Keith, opposed to last year when he kind of came out and said that he wasn't all there the whole time. So that's obviously been a big change as well.
Actually, Superstar, let's see here. I think I was wrong. No, I guess, I think you have to look it up, but I think the Blackhawks scored six goals in game 47. Yeah, through 46 games last year, they had 147 goals towards this year's, as opposed to this year's 150. So there's really no difference. But that's my point. The Blackhawks, and this is what I said before the beginning of the season. The Blackhawks were, this season's Blackhawks were going to live and die by how they were led by their top players. And to this point, that's held true because it's been Sharp, Taves, Hossa, and, Kane has been Kane up to, what you expect of Kane to this point for the most part. A little behind the pace. You expect that if he's healthy, he's going to get back on pace, okay? Boland is Boland. You're right. Keith and Seabrook have been solid. Your second pair really isn't what it was last year totally, but you have a better third pair. There's no doubt about that. Cullimore played fine last year, but you have your third pair with Monitor there. I guess this would be my, the next step here. The guys to me that have improved this team, there's two guys, and that's Monitor and Mayers. Because Monitor, he got paid like a second pair guy, but that's not what he was brought in to do. He's a third pair guy. If you take the money out of the equation, he's, him on that third, Monitor on that third pair is actually giving you, a little bit more skill on that end, some competitiveness, and he's just a better last year at this point you had Boynton out there, you had Hendry, you had Cullimore, those are the kind of guys you had on that third pair. Sean O'Donnell's played the best hockey of the season the last three games he's been out there, and with him and Monitor out there as a third pair, that's been a great third pair for him. I mean, it's just this past week, but. To me, it's been what the intangibles that Mayers brings and Monitor solidifying that third pair. And up until, specifically about a month ago, Letty was, in a small way, helping you transition out of – no, maybe I shouldn't say that. That's unfair. Letty was helping you transition out of the Campbell era, but he's fallen way behind that now. So – to me, it's obvious. Your needs are, scoring depth. I mean, you want some jam and some muscle and a little feistiness up front. Maybe Andrew Shaw brings you that feistiness along with Mayers and whoever else is going to be on that fourth line. But you need scoring help. And I don't, Andrew Shaw's got, you know, his goals, and that's great. That's not going to keep up. And he's not going to be on a scoring line anyhow. So, you know, that's not his game. If you watch him, you know, I mean, he's what he is. He's a ball of energy. He's not afraid. He's going to go into the danger areas. He's going to cause, you know, he's going to, you know, be hard on the fork check. He's going to be working hard all the time, laying a body on. And that's you like all that stuff. He's not a top two line player. He's getting minutes up there because of injuries, but he's, you know, and you run with guys when they're going hot. That's what a good coach does. But that's not where he's going to be. You need to bring in guys that are going to help you consistently score. That being said, is there a guy or two from last year you think this team misses?
I don't know. You know, when you're talking about guys who they miss, I don't know, because I'm still trying to, you know, who knows what the hell's going on with Michael for a week, like you mentioned. And I don't know about you, but I'm still trying to get a read on really what Andrew Brunette is and what he can be depending on who he's playing with. I mean, he's been all over the place. I think that's the guy who you're probably look to pick up some of the scoring, you know, even if it isn't goal scoring, setting up more goals than he has. So I don't know. I mean, is there anybody that jumps out at you from last year's team that you say, man, if that guy was here, I can't think of anybody off the top of my head.
Well, I know this is gonna draw some groans, but the guy that I would look at, and again, I wouldn't have signed him for the money that he got in Florida, but it's Thomas Kopechky. You know, I'm not arguing the Blackhawks should have signed him. I'm just talking about for the guy. You know, I'm not talking about what he got or would you have re-signed or anything. I'm just talking about the guy. And you watch him in Florida. He's playing great in Florida for what Thomas Kopechky can be, too. I think, you know, that's, you know, whether I mean, Kopechky can play all three, four. The positive about Kopechky is he played all three forward positions. He can play PK. He can stand in front of the net on the power play. He's a role player, but he's a team player as well. You know, he takes some dumb penalties, but he also drew a lot of penalties. He's a gamer. And I think that's the type of player that the Blackhawks are actually going to be looking for right now. They're looking for a gamer. Well, you talk about Andrew Brunette. I mean, Brunette, who is Brunette replacing on this team? He's replacing Troy Brouwer. Well, Brouwer last year to this point, 46 games, 11 goals, 12 assists. Brunette, 46 games, 9 goals, 9 assists. Brouwer was a plus 1. Brunette's a minus 10. The problem with Brunette, to me, is he's a fourth liner now at this age. He's a fourth liner and a second power play unit guy. But the problem with that is the line that you like to throw out there at the end of your, you know, the end of your power play, most teams anyhow, is your bump line. It's your fourth line, and that, you know, having him on that fourth line, that screws with you. It screws with your rotation. You know, and at 38, it's not like you can send, you know, and a coach isn't going to send his second power play unit out first, you know, just so he could, you know, I mean. I've always thought this about Brunette. I like the player. I don't think he's, you know, it was a signing that he wasn't available, but it's a guy that you would have brought in the previous year. This year, I don't know. It seems like an odd fit. It's been an odd fit. He's been, like you said, he's been all around, and he really hasn't stuck anywhere aside from, you know, being a third, fourth line guy right now. And it seems like, you know, wherever he plays, it's so glaring just how slow whatever line he ends up, you know, aside from when he skated with Taves and Kane or Taves and Hossa. Like, I mean, any line he's on is a really slow line. I just, you know, you know, is he going to be on your fourth line with Shaw and Mayers? Is that going to be your fourth line? Maybe. But he's not a first or second line guy. And I just I don't see him on a checking line. So it's like he's sort of he's an odd fit, you know. And is he an odd guy out if you're healthy at the end of the year? I don't know.
Yeah, it's something to definitely keep your eye on. The other thing when you're talking about this year's team to last year's team, and you brought up the second power play unit, is the overall special teams on, you know, between these two teams. Many of these games are won and lost on your penalty kill and your power play. And as of late, the Blackhawks power play, while it started out, you know, on fire, it obviously wasn't going to keep up that pace that they started out as. But, I mean, now is pretty atrocious for the skill set on this team. You know, how many playoff games are won and lost on a power play goal or a good penalty kill towards the end of a game? So, I mean, I don't know. I don't have it in front of me, but those two things are something to look at as far as where this team is compared to last year as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes without saying that, you know, special teams have to be better. Speaking of special teams, I want to talk about the Ice Hogs because I've got like 50 sheets of paper in front of me, Superstar. I want to talk about the Ice Hogs because I did promise to talk about the Ice Hogs. Over the weekend, the Ice Hogs last week, well, it was actually, we were on Wednesday, so that would have been after. They lost at Allstate Arena to the Wolves 4-2 last Wednesday. The Friday night, they were down in Oklahoma City with playing a team, the Edmonton Oilers farm team, which is actually the stingiest team in all of the AHL. And Ice Hogs had a really nice win. I mean, a really nice team effort win, 2-1. They came from behind. They were down 1-0 for most of the game. Philip Parodi, who was mostly terrible with the puck all game long, found the Jets and skated wide around a defenseman, cut to the net, and put a little bit of backhand forehand move and slipped it under the goaltender. That night, who was it that night? Jan Denis, and tied the game. And then later on, Jeremy Morin scored the game winner. Great win for him that night. Great win. It was one of the better games I saw all year from the Ice Hogs. Gutting that win out. 24 hours later, they're down in San Antonio after a 7-hour bus ride from Oklahoma City to San Antonio. Not as good of an effort. They were actually up 1-0 for the better part of the game, actually. Third period, interesting thing happened. Up 1-0. Now, we've talked about the Ice Hogs before and that they're the worst team statistically, or the second worst actually now. Statistically in the AHL. However, there's hope. There's not much hope, but there's hope. Basically, for the Ice Hogs to get into the playoffs, even at this moment, for them to get into the playoffs, they basically have to win 2 out of every 3 from now on. If they don't do that, they have no shot. But if they win 2 out of every 3, they're in. Now, you know, you could go on a run. You could win 7 in a row. You know, and that puts you in a better spot. But overall, you got to win 2 out of every 3. How realistic is that when you watch this team night in and night out? Not realistic, but there's still hope. They're 1-1 on the weekend. They're up 1-0, the beginning of the third period, and they're showing that they've got, whether it's tired legs, whether it's, you know, mental fatigue, whatever it was, they were not looking good at the beginning of the period. For the last 10 minutes of that game, Ted Dent, the coach of the Ice Hogs, benched Jeremy Morin and Brandon Peary. He started benching them basically a little over 10 minutes left in the game. 2 minutes later, San Antonio scores the game-tying goal. Bracken Kearns, who used to be a Rockford Ice Hog, scores the game-tier. 2 minutes after that, Greg Rallo, who's a Chicago area native, Gurney, and former Ice Hog back in the day when they were in the UHL, Greg Rallo scores the game winner. Okay, there's like 7 minutes left in the game. Brandon Peary and Jeremy Morin never see the ice again. Still, this was a hell of a statement by Ted Dent. And with Ted Dent, when the way he explained it was, you know, that those guys weren't really showing much energy, and in particular that they had taken a really long shift, when it ended up being their last shift of the game. And I want to explain what happened on the shift, because I went back and watched it. At the 11:40 mark, 11:40 left in the game, Brandon Peary jumped over the boards for Brett McClain. And Peary out with McClain's line mates, which off the top of my head would have been Philip Parody and Brandon Svensson, this guy that they've got on a PTO in there in Rockford right now. Playing so well that this past week, Christy Domenico and David Gilbert were both scratched in favor of Brandon Svensson. 11:40, they get caught in their own zone. They don't get the puck out, and they're not able to change till about 11:10. So about 30 seconds later, Jeremy Morin and Ben Smith hop over the boards to join Peary on that line. Peary actually looks like he's going to change because he'd been out there pinned in the zone for 30 seconds, but he stayed out anyway. That line stayed on the ice basically for a full 45 seconds. So Peary was out on the ice for, you know, about almost a minute and a half when it was all said and done. Ted Dent said that was the reason that it screwed with their rotation. They took a really long shift, and he wanted to send a message to them. Ben Smith ended up getting two more shifts. Peary and Morin did not. I'll say this. It was odd to me because I could go back and I could look at Peary, and for me it was more than Peary not coming off. It was, you know, you could look at it and see that he was just sort of standing around in the defensive zone, not help, you know, he wasn't coming in to provide help along the wall to help his defenseman win a puck battle. He wasn't providing support there. He's just sort of standing around. So I got that one. I didn't get Morin. But I'm watching on the internet, so it's really hard to see. And I haven't talked to anybody that said it, you know. I mean, to me, there's got to be something more to this. Because, you know, Ted Dent's a first-year AHL head coach. He's been a head coach before, and he's not a dumb guy. I don't understand why, you know, it's like there are times as a coach when you do have to send a message that clearly needs to get across to your team. But when you're still trying to sell to your team that the playoffs are a realistic goal, I don't understand shortchanging your bench that way and shortchanging your team that way, because sitting your two best offensive players, you know, it's one thing when you're up 1-0, and if you're going to say those two guys aren't giving it defensively, I get that. But when your defensive players then surrender the lead, and then give up, the 2-1 goal, at some point you got to put your offensive players back out on the ice, and he didn't do that, and I felt like that's just sort of handing a game over at a period of the season where you just can't. You just can't be handing a game over. To me, there's got to be something more to that that benching, you know. Because it also struck me because, Peary's out there for 30 seconds. Why, whoever it was, whether it was Ben Simon or Steve Pops, why did they send Smith and Morin to begin with? Why not pull Peary and then send out another line, give Peary, 40 seconds of rest, and then put that line out there? To me, I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around here. I don't think it can all fall on Brandon Peary and Morin for skating a long shift. Why did the coaches send them out there? You know, because you know that Peary, if you send Peary out there with those guys – you know, either one of two things is going to happen. Either he's going to stay a really long shift, or it's going to screw with your rotation because Peary's going to come off and somebody else is going to go out with that line, which means Peary the next time is going to go out on some other line. So unless you have plans to change your lines up mid-period, or if you don't mind doing that, as a coaching staff, by sending those two over the boards, you're just going to screw with it anyway. I didn't understand that they lost the game. They did win. Carter Hutton got a shutout. It was Rockford's first shutout of the season on Monday, Martin Luther King Day afternoon, and another great comeback performance by the Ice Hogs. But I found that odd. And so instead of, I mean, not that putting Peary and Morin back in the game would have got them a victory, but I just found it odd that in a week that they could have finished 3-1, you know, they had that opportunity at the time to go to win 2 of 3. They had that opportunity. It was sitting in front of them with a 1-0 lead, sitting in front of them in San Antonio to bench those two guys. I don't know what that says to your team about, you know, how seriously you're taking the playoffs. That's why I said there's got to be something more to that benching. I want to believe there's more to that benching because it doesn't make sense to me the way that it's been presented.
It doesn't sound like it makes sense. And, you know, it doesn't sound, and obviously I didn't see the game. I mean, I think we've all been there, who's ever played, where you know you're supposed to come off and you're about to go off, but the situation of the game, all of a sudden the puck's coming your way or all of a sudden you're breaking and you changing, you know, could, you know, put your team at a disadvantage when you know, you're breaking out of the zone and, hey, you got a two on one, but you change, and there goes that opportunity. So it doesn't sound like it was a situation like that. But I think there's definitely something more to it than meets the eye.
I know a lot of people have asked. We got to get into these reader emails right now, but I know a lot of people have asked about those guys. Morin's been playing well down in Rockford for a while, you know, and. You know, like I said before on the show, I thought that his call-up was ill-timed. I thought he, you know, I mean, they had to pick somebody, and Quenneville wasn't going to play Smith at the time because they had called up Smith, and he scratched him. So it was like they needed somebody else, and the guy that was most ready at the time was Morin. But the problem was that Morin hadn't played in a week because of that suspension. I thought it was a disservice to him. He wasn't ready, and he went back to Rockford. He picked his game back up again, but it's just this past week that he got picked up 3 goals, and it seems like the offense is starting to click a bit for him. So, you know, keep an eye on Morin because in spite of that scratch or that benching, we'll see what happens with him. Peary, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. All right. This is actually about a prospect. Chris, can you tell me whatever happened to Igor Makarov? I heard he'd gone back to Russia. What was the reason? Do the Hawks still own his rights, or do you ever think he'll be back? I had read that he had issues with management or coaches in Rockford. I don't think he had issues with anybody in Rockford. I think what happened was Makarov, in September, Makarov did sign a 3-year contract with St. Petersburg in the KHL. He's currently he started the season on the fourth line. He was actually on the fourth line for a few weeks. Right now, they're 35 games into their season. Makarov's played in every one of them. He's got 8 goals, 8 assists, which is good for 16 points is good for 11th on his team in scoring. He's worked his way up now to about second, third line minutes. He plays on a team with Viktor Tikhonov, who was recently on the Coyotes, Peter Pruka, Dmytro Kalinin, Maxim Afinogenov is on that team too, but he's only played about half the season, and Denis Grebeshkov. Basically, I mean, I don't think that there was any, you know, Makarov came over here thinking that he was a lot closer to being an NHL player than he really was. And then there was a transition, you know, there was a transitional period for him getting sort of going. I think he was definitely disappointed that he didn't do better last year in camp. I don't think he was disappointed that he got cut. I think he was disappointed that he didn't do better. Then there was the language barrier thing that he, you know, getting used to playing in North America. I think there were a lot of things. And again, we talked about it many times. At the end of last year, he was really coming around. And I think he did himself I don't know what he got as far as money in Russia. But it's not a lot of money. It's not like huge money. It's not like North American money. But he got guaranteed 3 years, and it's definitely more than he'd been making in Rockford. And, I think he should have came back for one more year, see how it went. But he got 3 years guaranteed in St. Petersburg, and he decided to go home. And that's the story. I mean, there's no, as far as I know, there's nothing more to the story. He was set to come back, and he was going to come back, and then St. Petersburg called. He called the Blackhawks. They said, if the guy's not going to come, he's not going to come. So they did it the right way. They negotiated a release. The Blackhawks still have his rights. So if he decides to, if he decides that he wants to come back and St. Petersburg gives him a release from his contract, the Blackhawks would have right of first refusal. So that's the story there. Oh, here's one. Hey, guys, he says a lot of stuff here, but this is the part. If you had to choose for one season right now, who would you take, Jonathan Toews or Pavel Datsyuk, superstar? This continues his email. I think purely on natural skill, you'd have to give the nod to Datsyuk, but does Toews' intangibles and leadership make him the better choice? What do you think?
Like he mentioned, I don't think you could say it any better. I think for 1 year, skill-wise, Datsyuk definitely has the advantage. But I do agree. I take Jonathan Toews over Pavel Datsyuk because of the intangibles, the face-offs, the leadership, how good he is defensively. Not that, obviously, Datsyuk is one of the best offensive defensive players in the league. I still go with Jonathan Toews. But I think you got to clarify it. And are you talking about taking Toews off this team right now for this year? Because I think, obviously, the supporting cast and everything else that goes into it, the window as far as skill set on the rest of the team, play into that. I mean, it's kind of an open-ended question. But if you're talking this year on the Blackhawks, I stay with Jonathan Toews.
Yeah, I mean, Datsyuk is incredible. You know, I mean, and he's right. I mean, when you're looking at just pure skill, I mean, it's Datsyuk all day. But, you know, whether it's for one game or for one season, at this stage, I mean, this Jonathan Toews that we're seeing this year, I'll take Toews. You asked me that question a year or two ago, I'd probably take Datsyuk, but this Jonathan Toews that we're seeing right now, I'd take him.
It's an interesting question, though.
This person says, hey, Block, how do you like Stahlberg now? Before last year, I remember you saying he'd be gone or sent to Rockford by Christmas. I don't think I said that. That doesn't sound like anything I'd say.
Exactly. It sounds like something you would say. If I remember right, on the Make Our Wagers of the year show, I believe I was the only one sticking up for Victor Stahlberg.
Yeah, and I'm the one who's part Swedish. This is his email continues. That was last year. Since then, he's earned a contract, put up career numbers this season, and now has a permanent spot on Toews' line as long as Q doesn't screw him up. What do you think about that?
Well, nobody has a permanent spot on any of these lines.
I mean, I'll respond because he's more talking to me. I've said this about Stahlberg many times. It's like when he gets hot, you got to ride his hot hand, and when he's not, what else is he doing for you? And I think this year you've got to give him a lot of credit in that he has bought into what Quenneville's asked him to do more so. It's not about being physical with some guys. It's not about, like, running around and throwing your weight around. because Stahlberg has skills, so he doesn't really need to do that as much. That's why I think a lot of people, and rightfully so, get on Brian Bickle, because Brian Bickle doesn't have a lot of skill. Does he have a nice shot? Well, he did last year. But other than that, if Brian Bickle is going to be successful in this league, he has to be willing to grind it out. He has to be able to willing to go into corners and win one-on-one battles, use his ass to create separation, and then, you know, work that puck back to the point, and then you know, put that thing on, you know, put the turn on, and then go right to the net, you know. And he doesn't do enough of that, and I think that's the frustration there. Whereas Stahlberg, he's faster, he's got more skill, and he definitely has a nose for the passing lane. So, you know, all those things. What Stahlberg needs to do, he's been doing it a lot better this year, is just competing shift to shift more. You know, getting, you know, using his legs and getting into a battle and providing that secondary assistance. He's doing that very well. You give him a lot of credit. As far as what I said last year, it was based purely on what I saw in Toronto. So I don't take any of it back. And, you know, that was last year's Stahlberg. Last year's Stahlberg is different than this year's Stahlberg, too. But my point about that was Stahlberg, all he was bringing here at the time was skill. And his, because when he talks about me having him going to Rockford, my point there was, again, you got to put it back in context. Not a lot of people these days have context, superstar. They don't know what context is. His waiver status was coming up at the time. If you go back and you recall this, I don't remember exactly when. I don't know if it was 25 games. We'll just call it 25. But you know, the clock on his waiver eligibility was ticking, and with the Blackhawks seemingly last year looking for somebody, you know, for players to spot, you know, to provide that scoring support that they lost with Bufflin and Versteeg and all those other guys that left. Stahlberg was going to need to come in and show something right away, and that was my point there. Because if he didn't, he was going to find himself in Rockford before he became waiver eligible. That was my point there.
Yeah, and you know, I remember having conversations over and over again about how we were talking about how Stahlberg needs to be more physical, and I think once again, like you mentioned, context. We're not looking for Victor Stahlberg to be throwing his weight around and be a Dustin Bufflin. But we're talking about going into the corners and really not shying away from the contact and getting to those gritty areas where you're going to score more goals.
Yeah, going to the corner and leaning on somebody. You know, that's
right.
Part of being physical too. Let's move along here. Hey, Chris, I've been impressed with the Blackhawks call-ups this year. All the Blackhawks call-ups this year. He says all of them. He's been impressed with. It'll be a shame to see any of them go, but I guess that's the price you pay for when your team drafts so well. Are Andrew Shaw and Jimmy Hayes here to stay? In your mind, have they leapfrogged Ben Smith, Jeremy Morin, and Brandon Peary on the depth chart? Your thoughts? Superstar.
Oh, I thought he was saying your thoughts. Like, you know, what are your thoughts? I think it's a lot of that depends on what they're going to do as far as making moves at the deadline and before the deadline. And while, yeah, it's a shame that some of these guys may have to go, you know, and you know, as he mentioned, it's the price you pay for drafting well. Well, it's kind of also the price you pay if you want to raise another banner. You know, if you're one or two pieces away from raising another banner, you make the move. So, as far as do I think they're here to stay, I think if they keep playing the way they have in the last week, they are.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting because, you know, I think for now, Andrew Shaw's, I know this for certain. Quenneville loves Andrew Shaw. Like that, I mean, that he does. He loves him. Hazy's less high on. Like, I have no doubt that unless Jimmy Hayes keeps scoring goals, which he has, I mean, he did against Minnesota last Thursday night, but unless Jimmy Hayes keeps putting the puck in the net, which, you know, we talked about this, when he moved up to lines above the fourth line, it was going to be interesting to see if he could still compete in the accelerated pace, and he hasn't done so well in that pace. I expect, you know, this is if all the, you know, if the Hawks get healthy, you know, that's a big if. Because, I mean, it seems like it's only a matter of time here before Hossa or somebody gets hurt. But let's just hypothetically say they're 100% healthy. I think Hayes goes back. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that Hayes will go back for at least one more Rockford run. I don't know how long it'll be. And all that will depend on how, you know, what the Blackhawks' health looks like. But, you know, I mean, there's still issues with his game. As much as his foot speed has improved since the beginning of the year, and it has, and you give him a lot of credit for that, you know, there's still some rough edges to that, to his game defensively, and he can still get better on his footwork, and he needs to get better on his footwork. Now, can he do that in the process of staying up while Sharp is out and a spot is available? Maybe he can. But I think that's something to keep an eye on. If, you know, if those things don't improve on the fly here while he's up, you know, then I think he'll go back. But, you know, he's still got another 2 weeks before he gets sent back. Interesting that Ben Smith got called up today. I just saw that. I haven't been on Twitter. I haven't looked at anything. I don't know what's going on. Did you hear about an injury or anything?
I did not. All I saw was that they placed Carcillo on IR. So that might have been the corresponding move.
Is that what you think?
That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, that did open up a spot. But, I mean, they wouldn't call up Ben Smith unless they were going to need him, especially since they called him up to participate in practice. So I just found that move interesting. I got to wonder if Brian Bickle is going to be in the lineup against Buffalo. You know, but again, I mean, there's a spot there for these guys, because Bickle and Frolik, to me, you know, those guys are easily replaceable. So there's spots there. But, I mean, to this guy's point about Morin and Peary and Smith, I think Smith's going to be traded. As far as who else, I don't know. Depending on what you can get, if you can get a Francois Beauchemin, you're going to have to trade Peary or Morin. I think that goes without saying. You know, but it'll be interesting to see who. I mean, I think in a perfect world, the Blackhawks would trade Ben Smith, Sean Lalonde, and, you know, some other guy, and they'd keep Peary and Morin and Saad and McNeil and Deneau and those guys. Because, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how willing the Blackhawks are to go, you know, to go for it. I mean, I'm sure that they'll try, but when it comes down to if they get held up for prospects, I mean, are they going to be willing to say yes? Because you really don't know what the next CBA is going to be, and the Blackhawks could be in a position where they're going to have to shed a lot of salary. I mean, maybe not, but they have to be prepared for that. And Morin and Peary and these guys would be a big part of how do you fill those gaps if they had to trade, let's just say, Marian Hossa. You know, so I think that's just something you got to keep in the back of your mind, too. Okay. Kyle Beach. Chris, I was just listening to your discussion on last week's podcast on Kyle Beach. I disagree with your argument that it's too early to call Kyle Beach a bust. He's 22, a second full-year pro, and he was also given chances in previous two seasons to play on Rockford, so I don't really consider last year his rookie season anyhow. I don't know about that. Andrew Shaw and Jimmy Hayes have come up within the first 3 months of their first seasons and have been able to make an impact. If you look at the 2008 draft, Beach is one of only two players who have yet to play in the NHL, and with the exception of Joe Colburn and Colton Tilbert, all others have played half seasons to 4 years. Beach hasn't even been considered for a call-up yet. Injury or not, you can't ignore the fact that he hasn't even been on the radar. He was even left off the Black Aces for last year's playoffs, which you yourself pointed out at the time was an indicator that the Hawks were not happy with him. I think that was Al. But maybe I sent it to him. Anyway, that's... He didn't sign it. I think that... I don't know. Well... You know, I got a lot of emails on Kyle Beach, and I'm not going to read any more of them. But Kyle Beach drafted in the 2008 draft, and it is correct that, you know, the other guys that were drafted around him have all been in the AHL. If you go one spot above, Cody Hodgson just was brought up to the Canucks last year, was played in a fourth and well, basically a fourth line role, but a little bit of third line, and. His role has increased this year. The guy that was drafted, because this is another email brought up to me, that the Blackhawks should have drafted Tyler Myers instead of Kyle Beach. First of all, it's great to go back now and look at that and say, oh, they should have done this. The Blackhawks were looking for a forward when they made that draft pick. They weren't looking for a defenseman. You know, and if the Blackhawks made a mistake drafting Kyle Beach, then Central Scouting made a mistake placing him there. You know, because Beach was anywhere in that draft. I saw Beach anywhere from 9th to 14th on Central Scouting, on Hockey News, on McKean's, all these draft boards. He was right in that neighborhood. The Blackhawks were looking for a forward. Okay, so. Who went as a forward? Who went after Beach? Zach Boychuk. Zach Boychuk's played 69 games in the NHL. He's got 7 goals and 18 assists. Would you rather? He's a center. Would you rather have Zach Boychuk? Is Zach Boychuk making the Blackhawks that much better of a team right now? No. He's probably not even on the team. You got to go down to 16 to get Joe Colburn, but Joe Colburn hasn't even been able to stick with the Toronto Maple Leafs yet, although he was drafted by Boston. I mean, where the Blackhawks picked, it was a defense draft, and they weren't looking for a defenseman. If you want to make the argument that Tyler Myers made the jump to the NHL right now, well, the Blackhawks wouldn't have known it. No team would know that right away, that he's going to play in the NHL. And the fact of the matter is that who did the Blackhawks go out and sign a week after they drafted Kyle Beach? Brian Campbell. So they were looking for a forward, and they got the best forward available at that pick. I mean, the next guy would have been Jordan Eberle, which, yeah, that now that it's easy to say, but Eberle didn't go to 22nd. I mean, was Dale Towne going to go that far off the board at that pick? No. So, and again, the discussion that we had last week about Kyle Beach wasn't about, my point last week was that he's out injured right now. So, you know, and you want to talk about Andrew Shaw and Jimmy Hayes, and I made this point last week, and I'll make it again now. There are reasons why Jimmy Hayes and Andrew Shaw got moved up the depth chart in Rockford and got more ice time that accelerated their development and got them into a spot to be considered when positions opened up in Chicago. And one of those reasons is the Kyle Beach injury. And the other one was one that we really didn't expect, which was Rob Klinkhammer falling off a cliff. So those two things open the door for those two guys. Now, I liked Andrew Shaw in training camp too. But for the first few weeks in Rockford, he was just a guy. And then when ice time opened up for him, you started to see him a little bit more in his progression and the impact that he was having on the games. But that didn't happen until those other two shoes dropped. So let's just take Clint Kammer out of the equation, because he's, you know, look at Kyle Beach. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, Clint Kammer was only going to be a fourth line forward and it didn't work out. So that, you take him off the depth chart. Look at Kyle Beach. Kyle Beach starts off the season playing very well. And then he gets in the fight with De La Rovere and he's out. So that opens up a spot. Who's to say that if Beach hadn't got that injury, that he would have continued playing well and he wouldn't have been the first forward call up? Or the second guy after Ben Smith? Or right there with Jeremy Morin? Or the guy that they went to after Morin came up and didn't do well? Maybe it would have been Shaw and Beach, or maybe it would have been Beach and Hayes. Who knows? But you can't, to say that these guys have, you know, had leapfrogged or anything, it's like, how do you say that when, you know, Beach can't play right now? You know, I mean, will he someday be referred to as a bust? Maybe. But I don't think it's fair to do it right now. That's my only point. You know, you could say, oh, well, before that, you know, guys develop at different paces. We talked about it. I mean, the one thing, you know, the one thing Beach has got to get into his head is that he's a goal scorer, and that's what he should be concentrating on doing. And at the beginning of this season, it appeared that he was simplifying his game. And, you know, if he can continue to do that, once he gets healthy and back in the lineup, which may not be till next year, you know, maybe you see a better Kyle Beach and he's on the right track. But to call him a bust right now, I just don't think it's fair, and that was my only point. A couple more before we go here. Back to Stahlberg. Hey, Chris, just a thought, but if the Hawks are going to get a proven top six forward, what are the chances you think Victor Stahlberg's a part of that deal? Should they sell high on Victor Stahlberg now or keep him in his low cap hit? Superstar.
I don't trade him. Yeah, I definitely understand the point of trading high. But you got to look at, you know, what maybe an average Victor Stahlberg gets you opposed to the Victor Stahlberg we're getting now, how much of an increase, what you're going to get back. But I think right now he's too much, especially with Sharp obviously out and Kane struggling. He's too big of a part of your offense right now to trade.
Yeah, I agree. It's tempting, you know, but I guess, it, you know, it really all depends on what can you get, you know. I mean, for me to trade Victor Stahlberg the way that he's playing right now, I'd want a guy who's under contract next year, because Stahlberg's under contract next year, you know, at a favorable price. Because, again, we get back to what we talked about a little bit before. Who knows what the CBA is going to look like next year, and you have to prepare for every possibility, and that includes if you've got guys that are real, you know, that are putting up numbers for you and not costing a lot of money. You don't want to move those guys so quickly. So I said I was going to. Do I have another email here? I think I do. You want to talk about the Hall of Fame?
Oh, we can talk about the Hall of Fame.
All right. This guy's it's a rather long question. I apologize for my flu tonight. I don't really feel like I have the flu, but I definitely have, the flu is definitely coming on.
It's been going around.
Yeah, I've been drinking a lot of tea. Well, the problem is I've already had the flu, so I shouldn't be getting the flu again. I mean, it's not like I got a flu shot or anything. But I think that's just my mentality. If I've had it once, I'm now immune for the season.
Yeah, no, that doesn't work that way. I had it a few weeks ago, and it lingered for a week and a half to 2 weeks.
Well, it would make sense that I'd get sick right before we go to Vegas. That's typical.
Well, that's standard, operating procedure.
All right, I'm not going to read this whole email, but basically this guy, he wants to put more Blackhawks in the Hall of Fame, and he's not necessarily being very, I'll just use the names. We've talked about this before. He figures Roenick and Chelios are going in. To me, Chelios is a unanimous first balloter. I mean, that's not even a question. But he does ask, do you think Roenick's a first balloter?
Yes. Yeah, I do. A lot of people say that that's just the 80s, 90s Blackhawks fan coming out of me. He's one of the all-time American top scorers in the history of the league. He had a couple 50-goal seasons. Obviously, the knock on him is that he never won a cup. But at the same time, I think for the negative that is, I think he did enough, and I do think he's a first ballot.
I think the problem that Roenick has
is his mouth.
Is the class. Well, no, it's the class that he's going to go in with. And I do think that there's a real good chance that he doesn't get in on the first ballot because he's eligible next year. And that class includes Roenick, Joe Sakic, Matt Sundin.
In.
Curtis Joseph.
In.
Brendan Shanahan.
In.
Marcus Naslund.
In.
Gary Roberts.
In.
Claude Lemieux.
In.
Ole the goalie.
Like we said, if you had to think about it, no, I don't say definitely not first ballot.
And Bobby Holik.
I don't know about first ballot, but I say he gets in.
Really? Okay, so my point is that's a pretty tough class to break into.
Yeah.
Especially the Canadian bias, that Shanahan, Sakic, and Sundin are all going in, so that's a lot of votes geared towards one direction. I think there's a better chance because in 2013, it's a lot slimmer of a pool, and that would also give Roenick the opportunity to go in with his buddy Keith Tkachuk at the same time. So I think there's actually a better chance of that. I think Roenick goes in 2013 with Tkachuk, and you see Sundin, Sakic, Shanahan, and probably Joseph going into. I don't know about those other guys being first ballot. Or Teppo Numminen is up too. Who's an interesting guy? He's an interesting guy when you look at some of the other defensemen that are in there. But I think that's tough. Doug Wilson. What do you think about him?
Ooh, that's a really interesting one because you almost think that if he really was going to get in. I mean, how long has Doug Wilson been retired for? You almost wonder if he was going to get in, that he would already been,
Well, yeah, I think the question he's asking is should he have been inducted already? My bias is growing up as a kid and watching Doug Wilson. I love Doug Wilson, but I don't know. I mean, that's one of the our rule. Here at the Third Man In Radio, is that if you have to think about it, then he's not a Hall of Famer. And if I have to think about it, then he's not a Hall of Famer. Which brings us to the most controversial one. Steve Larmer.
I think, yeah. I say definitely a Hall of Famer.
I mean, the thing that's working against Larmer, I mean, it's BS, but it's the fact, I mean, you know, he had longevity throughout his career, and then at the tail end of his career, he was too banged up to continue, or at least he was too banged up for himself to keep going. You know, he didn't want to keep going at less than what he expected of himself, so he retired. If he would have hung on for another year or so and gotten, you know, to career milestones, then I don't think anybody would argue it. But the fact that he didn't get to those milestones does hurt him. And I don't know. I think that Steve Larmer was an awesome player, but a Hall of Famer, I don't know. I could go either way on it, and if I go either way on it, then it's probably not. So, all right, I'm going to do this. So somebody sent me a link today to Cheer the Anthem. Now, Cheer the Anthem is, I don't think you've ever met a superstar, but or maybe you have. Jeff Bartle, who's a little buddy of mine. You know, he and I go way back. You know, superstar. He and I went to the same elementary school.
That is going way back.
Not at the same time, because I go a little way more back than he does. But we just missed each other. But yeah, we share that in common. And Jeff's a good guy. And I'm actually not here to rip on Jeff, because he didn't say this. But somebody else on his website did, and they're basically talking about trades. And, God, I can't even believe it. This person says, I think that Stan Bowman has shown significant shrewdness in framing deals that benefit the Blackhawks quite well so far. I think he will pull the trigger, and I see him going after young hybrid player from somebody who has needs greater than the Blackhawks. Toronto, for instance, is in the bottom. Blah, 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 blah. Would they part with Mikhail Grabowski for the right package? Well, yeah, I mean, Toronto would part with anybody for the right package. Also, even though the knock against them is that they are unproven youngsters, he's suggesting this, I guess, for the Blackhawks to trade for. From the Rangers, Derek Stepan. From Ottawa, Zach Smith. And from New Jersey, Adam Henrique. Why would the New Jersey Devils trade Adam Henrique? I know that not a lot of people know about Adam Henrique, but right now, this is so stupid. I can't even believe. Adam Henrique, I believe at this point, leads all rookies in scoring. Okay? He's a fast centerman who is quickly becoming the best centerman that the Devils have. Why? I mean, he's out with an injury right now. I think he's got a groin. But why would they trade? I mean, In today's game, a young, fast centerman on an entry-level deal with two more years remaining at his entry level, why would the Devils trade that guy to the Blackhawks? And what would it take to you're going to trade the Devils? Are the Devils going to take Brandon Peary and Jeremy Morin for Adam Henrique? Like, what are you going to trade for that guy? I mean, think to 4 years ago when, like, the Blackhawks had, you know, weren't scoring enough goals, so they were going to trade Jonathan Toews. I mean, it's just stupid. And what else is said here? I mean, okay, and then for a defenseman. See, this is again, I don't know whether this is complete homerism, or I don't know what this is, but when talking about defensemen, this person says, in addition to Boschman, I will put in a request for either Kevin Shattenkirk down in St. Louis or Carl Gunnarsson from the Leafs. Now, Gunnarsson you could get from the Leafs, but Kevin Shattenkirk from the Blues? The Blues are the best team in the league. Kevin Shattenkirk is a young defenseman that they just traded from Colorado. Like we talked about before, he's the centerpiece of that, you know, that defense now. He's going to be on that blue line for the Blues for years and years to come. Can you imagine what the Blackhawks would have to trade to get Kevin Shattenkirk? I mean, this is just stupid.
As I mentioned, the Blues aren't going to make a trade within their own division with realignment, a possible thing where you got to go up against them. So, yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
I couldn't believe this. At first I thought it was a rib because you couldn't possibly be this dumb. But apparently so. Anyway, go check out
While we're filling out wish lists, I'll take Jeff Skinner in Carolina too.
Yeah. Once he returns from injury, what would it take to get Ryan Nugent-Hopkins from the Edmonton Oilers? What a dope.
You know, Block, you mentioned the Oilers. Did you see what happened in the pregame skate tonight with the Oilers?
No, I did not. What happened?
I only caught part of it, but it looked like, you know, they were just going through their drills, firing the puck, circling around, and it looked like somebody, and I couldn't get the number, lost an edge, and about three of them went tumbling into the corner boards. And I believe it was Taylor Hall got a big gash.
Oh, no.
Warm-ups.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He's on like two of my fantasy teams.
Yeah, he was gashed. He was gashed pretty good.
Like where?
I look like he was above his eye.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it definitely did not look good. Should be pretty easy to find if you check out NHL.com.
How you doing in the third man in fantasy league, superstar? Since you brought it up,
let's not talk about it.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's been a struggle. It's been a struggle for the superstar in the third man. It's been a struggle in both leagues.
You know what? Your record is comparable to the Rockford IceHogs.
It is. Part of the problem, and by no means is this an excuse, but, you know, everyone gets into routines. You have routine, and I have routine. One of the routines I had was, you know, and probably not a great routine, was getting into work, starting up the old computer. One of the first things I do is I go and I change my fantasy lineup for the day. Well, about 2.5 weeks ago, it was a little longer than that, fantasy football, no problem. Get on it, change lineups, do whatever I have to do. Also, on the Yahoo network that we use, Jassy Hockey, completely blocked. I don't understand. So it's thrown me off my routine, and it hasn't been good.
As evidenced by your record.
Yeah.
But you're in that league, what, you're sixth? You're barely sixth out of eight teams in that league.
I'm going to make a comeback. It's not over for me. Plenty of time left.
Is that eight or ten? No, it's ten. You're eighth out of ten. I was going to say, we don't have an eight-team league. I'm thinking about something else. Our personal league. How are you doing in there?
A little better. Not much, but a little better. The fantasy teams have been very much like the NHL. I've been very concussed all year. I get one or two guys back from being concussed, and three, four guys go down with the concussion.
So the Blackhawks and the Buffalo Sabres on Wednesday night going at it, and then the return this Friday night of Christopher Stieg, Brian Campbell, Thomas Kopechke, and Johnny Madden. The Florida Panthers in town trying to avenge that 3-2 shootout loss that they suffered at the hands of the Blackhawks back there in November at the, whatever they're calling it now, the National Car Rental Center.
Should be two good ones.
And then a big Central Division battle on Saturday night in Nashville, the first of a home-and-home with those Predators. And then the All-Star game.
Will Ryan Suter be a Nashville Predator then?
They're gonna sell high on Ryan Suter while they're competing for the top spot in the Central.
Just little rumors I've been hearing.
Little rumors you've been hearing. Get Jeff Bartle on the phone. I think he needs a new writer. All right, I'm done ripping on Jeff Bartle and Cheer the Anthem. I'm sure they're all great people. And I like Jeff, I do. But whoever wrote that was just insane this morning, apparently. I don't know. I got nothing left. I'm gonna go dunk my head in green tea.
You go do that. Be good for your cold.
Superstars, thank you for joining me. I am going to do a show. I don't know who's going to be on the show. It might be Superstar. I talked to Al Simaglia earlier today. He might be coming on. But there'll definitely be a show next Wednesday, the 25th, in some form or another. And I believe that'll be – well, I don't know. I don't want to say. But that'll be a show, next Wednesday. So now you know exactly when it's going to be. Usually of late, I have no plan, but now I at least have a plan.
Good enough.
Exciting. And that'll be 2 days before, or 3 days before the UFC at the United Center that you and I will be partaking in.
We will be partaking. I'm looking forward to it.
In the big sky suite, looking down at the octagon, which we found out today will be Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping, which would be a lot of fun. So, all right, Superstar. Go to bed.
All right, buddy. You have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. And I apologize for the thing at the beginning of the hour. I don't know what happened. But next time we'll be better. Can't promise that, but we'll try. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday, January 25th, at a time to be determined. Good night, everybody.